Bonjour, bonjour, bonjour. Welcome to the SBS Cycling Podcast. I'm Christophe Mellen, I'm your host. And today I am joined with the great, and I'm not mincing my word here, Pat Shaw. How are you, Pat?
Always great, mate. And it's a fantastic time to be a cycling fan, that's for sure.
Oh, there's so much that has happened, first of all, on the road. And we'll talk about the Ronde van Vlaanderen. That's my best accent. I hope you enjoy. I've been practicing as well. So, of course, that was on SBS over the weekend. There's also Paris-Roubaix coming up. And there's also a little thing called the Super Pro League, which I think you are involved with, which was launched last week to the media. But let's start with the races that were on SBS this weekend. The Tour de Flandre, Flanders, Ronde van Vlaanderen. We'll start with the men's race chronologically. Mathieu van der Poel, unbeatable. What were your thoughts when you were watching that race, Pat? I think you were like us. So there's a few words that you can't probably say in this podcast.
Oh, no. I think we can keep it PG. I think it's a fantastic performance, obviously. I mean, you only got to look at the result sheet to be able to say that. But the way that it transpired and the way that the race shaped was very, in some ways, old school classics. And, you know, it was muddy conditions. It was difficult to control your bike. And once again, Mathieu van der Poel showed that he has the best handling skills of everyone. Many tried. And what I really loved about this particular edition was that teams, should I say, didn't try and wait for him to create the chaos. They tried to get ahead of it, which made
Pedersen. I'm sure you're thinking about him. Pedersen was on the gun and really trying to outsmart the whole Alpecin team, because it's Mathieu van der Poel, but the whole team was absolutely brilliant as well.
Oh, certainly. And look, to be honest, Little Trek aren't slow in coming forward to suggest that they are the leading team in these races, and they have the numbers and they have the squad to do so. But also Jorgensen from Team Visma Lisa Bike took the race on early, and I loved his quote that he tried to follow, but he just ran out of talent. And I thought that was a very unique quote, one that he'd obviously put some thought into. And I think sometimes we forget that just because you don't win doesn't mean that you haven't given it everything. And it was a really good way of summing that up for, I think, not just people on the couch at home, but also young riders coming up through the junior categories, that sometimes you have to accept that on the day or at the time in your life that someone has better talent than you. And they did that. And I'm very respectful of that commentary that he gave.
Yeah, do you remember that quote? It was in basketball. I think it was last year when the player, he was asked by the media what happened, why the failure. And he said, are you telling me that Michael Jordan winning 7 titles but losing 5 has failed, you know? This is exactly on the same length.
Yeah, and I really like that from athletes in particular. That one was Giannis Antetokounmpo from Milwaukee, and he summed it up really well, you know. And another quote to go the other way, you know, if you don't win the last race of the season or the last game of the season, then no one cares. And that's certainly the way it goes sometimes. A lot of people will forget next week that Luca Mozzato was in second and that Niels Pollitt was in third, albeit some controversy there as well.
Yeah, we'll talk about that as well, yeah. But Mathieu van der Poel, if we just concentrate on him, the pedigree, we know where he's coming from, and at some point we'll talk about we'll stop about talking about grandpa and his dad and so on, because he's definitely making a name for himself. But let's look at it. This is his 51st pro win. 51st pro win on the road, not even counting what he's won outside of the road. So he's already a phenomenon. I mean, this year he's already won the E3. He's winning the Flanders. He's a hot contestant for Roubaix next week. How much more can this guy do? Honestly.
Well, I think this is the new generation of cyclists, and that they race for fun. And, you know, we've all spoken about in last season and the seasons previous that a lot of people commented that Mathieu had a struggle to handle his aggression and would often explode. Yes, when he won, he was phenomenal. but when he lost, he looked really bad. And I think
we saw him in Harrogate in the World Championship, where he just emptied the tank way too early, and he got really angry with himself.
Yeah. And I think ultimately, remembering that he was fairly new to road cycling, and he came out of a sport that had a very different tactical sense. Now, he's brought across those things from cyclocross, but also understood the laws and the basics of what road cycling is, and particularly long distance events. He's now got it nailed. When you look at those 51 victories, it's not that far behind Pogačar, who is, you know, we all talk about how many wins he's had in his short career, but at the same time, Mathieu van der Poel is equally as impressive. They're just very different bike riders. And I think what really impresses me about van der Poel is for him to sign with Alpecin until 2028 just shows incredible stability within their team. And it also shows a great lot of confidence in their setup, in their administration and their management. And and that's why, you know, a lot of people want to talk about, you know, riders leaving at the end of the season maybe, but I don't see it happening. I think this team is really, really one to watch for the future to become one of the big, big hitters.
Yeah, and then you got Philipsen, you know, probably the one you're thinking about, and of course he's not going to leave. You know, would you leave? Well, it'd be crazy to, unless there's a, you know, another business aspect to it, sport-wise, it'd be silly to leave.
Yeah, and I think sometimes, I guess, you know, we all talk about cycling and its financial side of things, and, you know, even the best riders in the world, they're not on contracts that are comparable to, you know, football players. And when I say football, I mean soccer. But at the same time, you still need to be content in your environment. And we see riders go from teams to teams and their trajectory alter because of the environment they're in. And I think if you're in an environment you're comfortable in and you're having success, that is going to be easier than going somewhere and being bogged down or emotionally waited upon on more money. The money will never make you feel good. That's no doubt about that. And I think if you're in a good place, you're going to perform better. And with that, you're going to live a better life. So I'd be surprised to see him move on, but money does talk, unfortunately.
Yeah, and he's got 10 years as well with Canyon, that's renewed as well. His commitment to him as well. I know you're not a Canyon shop, my friend, but it's still a very important move for the industry and for the pro cycling area. You talked about controversy. I guess you mean Michael Matthews, third on the road in the sprint. It's got to be said, I was watching the race and then getting excited in a little WhatsApp group I've got with Maka and our boss as well, Catherine Whelan, and we were like all getting excited, and Maka straight away went, hang on guys, this is a DQ, it's not, think what you want, but it probably is a DQ. He saw it straight away. What were your thoughts when you saw that sprint?
I guess you got to put your hat on and how you look at it, and maybe from a commissaire's perspective, a referee's perspective, maybe it wasn't fair. But I think ultimately from a racing perspective, I think it's really hard to determine a rider to know that there's someone on his outside, particularly when they're behind the rear derailleur. We don't have wing mirrors like motor vehicles do. And you are frowned upon if you do a head check in the final as well. So it's sort of a lose-lose situation. Yes, he deviated his line, but for mine, particularly at the end of a race, 270 plus kilometers, there needs to be a gauge of some form of gray area, and it should go in the benefit of the rider that goes first. A bit like batsmen, you know, get benefit of the doubt. If you're leading it out, there should be some form of benefit to that rider. That's a different conversation. First vision in the live, I didn't think it was worth a disqualification. Yes, Nils Bullet was held up, but would he have got around Michael Matthews? And that's the real question. Not about did he impede his line, would he have beaten Michael Matthews on the line? And I don't believe he would have. And therefore, I think that the decision was incorrect.
Why are you challenging Maka, my friend? Careful. I've tried once.
I'm always happy to challenge Maka, and it's always a very energetic conversation. Mind you, at the same time, while we're on the Maka conversation, I'm loving his videos on his journey.
Vietnam. It makes me want to travel again, you know? Yeah. Not that I've been back for long, but it makes me want to travel again. That's for sure. Let's listen to Matthew Heyman. This is what you had to say.
Pretty disappointed. Roller coaster of emotion was there, and Michael did a great final. Whether he's relegated or not, you can't looking back on the way he raced the final, just absolutely took it on. He was on the back foot after Koppenberg, lost a lot of spots, and then came back. and really he gave it everything. He opened the sprint early to go after that second place. He was third across the line, and sadly, we have to live with the judge's decision.
So that was Matthew Heyman. Philosophical, of course, as Matthew Heyman always is. On the road, he would always be, Michael Matthews would be third, but of course, on paper, he's 11th. And thank you for sharing your vision as well. We'll talk about the women's race in a second, but as a link of the women's race, because a lot happened as well in that race, but the Koppenberg was really the key point, the key part for the men's race and the women's race. Didn't eventuate the same way for both world champions, Kopecky or Mathieu van der Poel. But how good it is to see that part of Flanders, the wet pavé on such a hard climb. But the chaos was, you know, bringing me back to images that we used to have in the 80s when only three or four riders would go on their bike and everybody else had to finish the climb walking.
Yeah, look, it is scenes and you know, you want to see those tough conditions. We'd love to see a Paris-Roubaix wet. Of course we would, as the viewers. And you know what? The riders really love these tough races as well. Don't worry about that. Yes, sometimes they get to the end and they haven't achieved the result they want to achieve. There's no doubt about that. They're upset. But ultimately, they look back and their story's always going to be about the hardest races. And this is going to go down as one of those hardest because of the fact that a lot of riders didn't even get to do the climb on their bikes. I think that's what makes it remarkable about Kopecky's result, in fact, is that she's come to a standstill and then she's almost got back to the front. She certainly is my favourite rider in the female peloton. But you got to give hats off to the way that Lidl Trek rode. They absolutely nailed it. From a perspective, I think if you want to take your time to go back and look at the vision, particularly in the final, in the last kilometre, 1,200 metres, Longo Borghini is on the radio maybe four or five times, and Van Anrooy was on the radio three to four times, even in the last 300 metres, telling each other what each other was doing and what each other was seeing. And I think they executed it phenomenally, and in the end, they got the great result that they wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. And then actually could highlight a superb win from a Longo Borghini, and then where she comes back from as well. But how strong this team, Lidl Trek, is from the men and the women side. They are at the pointy end of the race. So you said money doesn't make you feel better, but money certainly made them a little bit better in their investment, their approach to the racing. They are part of the dominant forces on the men and the women.
Well, certainly. And in fact, Lidl Trek in some regards are turning the head of the women's peloton because SD Works has really ruled the roost there for quite some time. Albeit a little bit of bad luck has gone their way, and certainly SD Works has still got great results this season, but maybe some of this, all this chat in the background is finally taking some toll on the team and its compatibility, but I don't think it changes anything about Lotta Kopecky. She's just a phenomenal rider, and again, she finishes in top five. Another one, Marianne Vos, she never disappoints. How does she keep delivering these amazing results? Some thought 4 or 5 years ago maybe she was at towards her end. She's maybe going just as good or better right now.
Yeah, she finished fourth on the race on the day. And then, of course, Vollering finished eighth with, we forgot to say, Nyadoma. Good performance from Nyadoma as well, because second on the day. I'm not going to say that was unexpected, but it's a great performance for her.
Yeah, she's one that when she's going well, she can win any race, really. She's always been that very multi-dimensional rider, and certainly handles the bike really well, so the conditions suited her also. She looked a winner. She looked a winner at 100 metres to go, but the big sprint, the big power sprint from Longo Borghini to come up and win the race was phenomenal, and a really tough race too. You could see a few riders probably coming out of this with some good form, but there might be a few pay the penalty for this big day in the wet.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, do you know how Mathieu van der Poel celebrated his win in Flanders?
I don't.
Question?
That's a good question.
You don't? Well, he's jumped into a plane and went to Spain to train for Paris-Roubaix. He didn't really celebrate. That's what he did. That's how professional the guy is. He had a few celebrations, but nothing massive. I mean, we can go. He's used to it. He's won it now three times, you know, part of his 51 race pedigree, race win pedigree. But yet again, in the few hours after winning Flanders, he jumped onto a plane and went to Spain to be ready to defend his title at Paris-Roubaix next week.
And he will be very difficult to beat, but it's a different kind of lion to tame. Paris-Roubaix, it's going to be a lot of luck involved, and but certainly, as we've seen, attacks going from 130 or further from the finish means that he's going to be in the front of the race. He's going to see everything he needs to see, and obviously, Foray d'Arenberg will be part of the parcel of who can win, who gets through there unharmed or disadvantaged, and certainly seeing the numbers come out the other side, it's going to be a great race to watch. But if we revert back just quickly, I want to do a shout out to Josie Talbot, who spent most of the day in the early break as well from Australia. That was a great ride. Got caught probably at the wrong time. You don't really want to be caught at the bottom of one of the important climbs of the day, and particularly in those conditions. But a shout out to Josie for a great ride.
Yeah, absolutely. And then while we are at the shout out as well, a shout out to Luke Durbridge, which did almost the same. He was at the front pretty much for a large part of the Flanders as well, and good performance from the chap from WA.
Yeah, and look, he'll go to Paris-Roubaix, and he still really loves that race. If we remember, he spoke so confidently about getting a big result at Paris-Roubaix, and he's been right towards there a few times before, and maybe he can find himself in the early move, much like a Matthew Heyman style, and see how he can go towards the last hour and a half of that race. But certainly one to tune in for.
It's this weekend on SBS, of course. Let's talk about Paris-Roubaix. You mentioned how biblical this race can be. I'm not mincing my words. It's probably my favorite race, one-day race ever. But what's your relationship with Paris-Roubaix yourself, Pat? Do you love that race? What do you want to see? What do you expect? What do you want to see over the weekend on the men and the women's race?
Well, when I was growing up, I loved Miguel Indurain. Miguel Indurain was my favorite rider.
The guy with a heartbeat at 28, heartbeat of 28.
Yeah. And I heard heart like a farlap, and hands like a beast. But I had a replica Benesto yellow jersey, and I used to wear it all the time when I was, 9 and 10 years old. He was my favorite rider. But Paris-Roubaix was the one race that I dreamt, not the Tour de France. Paris-Roubaix was the one race I dreamt that I would one day ride. I obviously never did. However, I've always enjoyed watching it, and I've loved the different versions of the event over the different decades and different eras of racing, in the 90s to the 2000s to the early 2010. Now to this type of racing, I mean, this could be the best one we ever see. How do we go with who turns up to the start line? That's been a bit of the problem over the last week and a half. A few of the favourites, particularly in the men's race, have obviously going to be unable to start. But I think we'll still see a very, very good race. And it's my favourite race to watch for the year, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sure you're mentioning, or you're wanting to talk about Wout van Aert. How much did we miss him at the Flanders? And actually, how much are we going to miss him at Paris-Roubaix? Because we said it before in this podcast with the different guests that we had, but we knew he was basically planning this whole season pretty much. Okay, there's the Giro, which is also a big question mark for him now after the crash. But how much have we missed him? Like, it was his plan for the year to be super efficient at Flanders and Roubaix. He wanted to win one, if not both of them. Certainly that crash was horrible to watch. The aftermath as well of the riders crying and shouting as well. You could feel the pain. What's your view on the fact that Van Aert is not here, and how much are we going to miss him?
Well, I think it's like taking a great book and ripping out two or three chapters and just randomly pulling them out of the book and then trying to make sense of it all. He's a character that fulfills a great part of the story in every race that he races, regardless of whether it's a mountain stage in the Tour de France or whether it be a classics race. It doesn't matter. He always adds substance to the story. And I guess in that regard, we miss him. We always are going to miss him when he's not on the start list. But much the same as if Mathieu van der Poel wasn't on the start list and Wout van Aert was. So, yes, we're going to miss him. But I think what it does is it opens up other opportunities for these other riders, in particular Matteo Jorgensen. I think he can really do something special. His size and the way that he rides really opens up Paris-Roubaix a lot. And I think with Dylan van Baal as their experienced rider that'll be in the group for Team Visma-Lisa Bike, I wouldn't be writing them off.
I'm a winner, van Baal. I'm a winner of Paris-Roubaix.
Correct. And you know, maybe still got it in him. I'm not so sure that he does, but at the same time, he'll probably start with their number one on the back for their team, with Christophe Laporte there as well, who may have gone a little bit wanting in the last few weeks, especially at Milan-San Remo when he was the leader and sort of fell short. But maybe that's taken a bit of the pressure off. And I think that combination of van Baal, Laporte and Jorgensen really makes it an interesting bike race, particularly from the perspective that it'll be 3v1 probably for against Alpecin de Koenig.
Yeah, if we talk about Jorgensen, actually, it's a very good point here. What a change of a rider between last year and this year. He came from Movistar. And you mentioned Christophe Laporte as well. This happened to Christophe Laporte, came from Cofidis and all of a sudden changed the game, changed everything for him and starting to really perform and win races. And let's not forget he's wearing the European champion jersey on his shoulders. Jorgensen is pretty much of the same. As soon as he changed, everything changed. And when he was questioned about it a couple of weeks ago, he said everything changed, not just small things. Everything changed. And do you feel this, that now we are in a new era where he's one of the riders that can really come and fight with the best and for either a one-day classic or maybe on a kind of longer tours as well?
Oh, certainly. And look, he's shown that in the past. But what he's moved to Visma-Lisa Bike has shown is that when you're in a good environment that you're happy and content in, A, you're going to perform better. But also, when you're around like-minded people, athletes, management, et cetera, always everyone striving for the best, you're obviously going to lift your level. We're either going to lift your level or you won't be going to the races because they'll get you out of the team. It's pretty simple, really. It's much like Ineos of the years gone by. Maybe Ineos isn't the powerhouse it was, but for a long time, every single one of their riders was strong. It's just the way it works. Maybe at Cofidis when Laporte was there, you know, there's 3/5 or 4/10 of the team that really was excited to go to the races, but the majority weren't. And that's always a difficult thing where I think even your 6th and 7th string riders in these teams, when they turn up, they're ready to race, they know their job, and they're ready to put themselves on the line. And that's where Lidl Trek also is leading the way a lot at the moment. And a rider for them that really interests me is Jonathan Milan going into Paris-Roubaix, a really big guy, heavy set, and it looks like he's turned a corner in his career. So I'm really interested to see how he fares come this weekend.
And, of course, you can't rule out Mats Pettersson as well. I mean, on a race in Paris-Roubaix, you can't rule him out.
No, and Edward Tans as well. And look, they've got exactly the same scenario as Visma. They have many cards to play. But I think Pedersen probably tries to follow Van der Poel, and then the others try to get ahead of the race a bit, trying to force the hand of his helpers to leave him one out, and hopefully they get the numbers game. That's about the only way I think he can be beaten at the moment. And as a wild card after his amazing performance on the weekend, Luca Mazzardo from Arkea B&B Hotels, we have to mention him as well.
Yeah, and coming from Arkea as well, I'm not going to say it's a surprise, but it's a pleasant surprise to see the Red Jersey. And because he's got competition in that team as well, let's remember as well. So it's an interesting position for him to be at.
Yeah, but I think what it shows, particularly if you're in part of these lower tiered teams, is that never say never. I mean, my great friend Simon Clark, he's shown it time and time again. Never sort of stop trying. Always give 100, and you really do surprise yourself. And Mazzardo was just in the perfect spot. He made the right decisions in the finish, and they're the 1% differences that make when you come down to those races, particularly after 270Ks or more.
Yeah, okay. I'm going to have to get you on the books. Who's going to win Paris-Roubaix, my friend? On the men's side and on the women's side?
From the men's race, I've got Van der Poel. I just think he's in incredible form, and as you said, directly after the race of the weekend, the Flanders. He's head off to Spain to just continue. He knows his sort of first part of his season finishes on the weekend. That's it. He's all in. And the team is all in for him as well. Philipsen owes him for Milan-San Remo. So I think all in for Van der Poel. He'll get the job done. But I think it's going to be really exciting last 70 kilometres with Laporte, Jorgensen and Van Baal also to play a very big role.
Yeah, and then on the movement side, can we go past Kopecky? She's probably frustrated. Tour de Flanders is probably means a lot as well for her from being from the area, the region. And we know when she's down, she's not down for long. And of course, on that performance, would that make her even more angry and hungry to actually win and perform at Paris-Roubaix?
It's funny, people would say, you know, it's hasn't got the climbs and the short climbs, but I think this is the race that suits Kopecky best. However, if we think back to Alison Jackson taking out the win, we do see surprise winners here as well. So I don't think there's an out-and-out favourite. I think it will depend on the official lineup from Lidl Trek, which still hasn't been announced at this point. But certainly for mine, Lotta Kopecky's my pick. And I've got Mariana Vos on the podium. She just continues to be impressive. And with the heart, I'm saying this with the heart, I've got Grace Brown in second.
Yeah, that would be so nice to have Grace Brown. Even on the top march, on the top spot, you know, I'll settle for a win as well.
Oh, yeah.
You said on the second,
I'll settle for a win. We'll take the win for sure. I would love to see Grace be successful on the weekend.
The one I want to watch as well is Tiff Cromwell, because when we had her in a podcast last week, she mentioned that the team wants her to really try, to really have a go at Roubaix. And I think that's an interesting proposal for her in the way that she's, we said in the podcast, if you have listened to it last week, and if you don't know why you didn't, you should. It's a fantastic podcast with her. But the fact that she says that she's matured a lot, she's got a lot more ambition for the team. She's probably a better role player, team player for Canyon as well. And they really came at her saying, try at Roubaix, have a go at it.
Yeah, and look, I think that speaks a bit more about their lineup as well. You know, it's fantastic to have Tiff being put in that position. I just don't know at this moment if it's going to be suitable. Love it a bit. I just think these bigger riders with more power are going to be hard to hold, particularly if it's wet conditions. You do need a bit of luck, and I think if she finds herself in the front of the race, particularly at, you know, the last 60Ks, it's anyone's race, and it's who wants to bite the cherry the hardest and be the bravest. That's why I really love Grace Brown, because she's not been scared to get ahead of the race, even if the favourites are all there. She goes and attacks, often at times a discomfort for others, obviously for herself as well, but knowing that it's hard for them to follow. So that's why she's my top Aussie, but I'd love to see Tiff Cromwell up there for sure.
Yeah, 100%. Okay, let's talk about Pro Velo Super League, something that I know you're very passionate about. So last week I was at a media launch. First of all, let's listen from Matt Wilson. He's the head of this league.
I'm here with Matt Wilson. We had the launch of the Pro Velo League. Talk to us about it.
Yeah, so it's launching next year in 2025. It's an exciting new concept, a much more compact racing formula. So sort of 10 to 12 week season, starting in January, finishing in the end of March, and really just you know, bringing in our oldest, most traditional events, and then bringing in some new and exciting events as well, and bringing them back to capital cities, back to where people can watch it, creating some really great, interesting broadcast coverage, and yeah, getting eyeballs back on domestic road cycling.
What's the importance of it being, I was going to say inverted brackets or inverted commas, just 12 weeks? But it's so punchy at the perfect start of the year for the young riders as well.
Yeah, it works well on a few different levels. It works well because there's not a lot of sport in Australia at that time, so there's going to be a lot more interest on it. It works well to capitalise on the summer of cycling in Australia and getting some good quality racing for the riders. And then the ones that are looking to turn professional, looking to develop further, they have the rest of the season to go overseas, to go to Asia, to go to Europe and race and concentrate on that. So, yeah, and it also allows audiences to get behind something that has a narrative that makes sense. So it's this week, who won, talk about it next week. There's another race. So it gathers momentum and gathers steam and gathers interest.
So there was Matt Wilson talking about the Pro Velo Super League. Later on, we'll have a chat with Kelly Bennett as well. Or Kelly Bennett, I think you know her very well. You as a team director or your position in the Bridge Lane, what do you make of this importance of the NRS was a bit struggling, but now there's this new Pro Super League or Pro Velo Super League. How does that change the game for guys like you?
Yeah, look, it needed a fresh. It did. It needed a refresh, and hats off to Matt Wilson and his group to get this going, and also the backing. It's a phenomenal effort, and I'm no ways going to be negative about it at all because it's been a phenomenal effort by the group. There's certainly a little bit of polishing that they'll do over the coming months. But what an effort. And for the future of Australian cycling, it's really important. I like the way that it's set up, the professionalism of it. It's got a real glisten to it, a nice shine. And I think it's going to excite the riders that are involved as well, because there's something great about being the first winner of a series or first winner of a race. And so that's what this will be like. So there'll be a big celebration of the first winners, the inaugural winners, and with great plans for a five-year plan they've already got set out. And I've read the documents, really, really impressed with what they got. I'd love to see more races added. I'd love to see there be a front end of season and back end of season still. I'm happy for the winter to be sort of stagnated so people can go to Europe, but I would love to see some events come into the back end of the calendar. So we'll see how that progresses over time. I don't want to say too much because I haven't really had a chance to talk to Matt Wilson one-to-one about some of the feedbacks, but it's a phenomenal effort, and they've taken on this challenge in the most difficult of times, which makes this even more a gallant success.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's listen to Kelly Bennett.
So Kelly, you're part of the launch of this Pro Velo Super League. What does that mean for you as a rider in terms of opportunities, the calendars, and the type of racing you'll be facing next year?
So it means that so teams will have a lot more exposure, and I would potentially get a lot more exposure as a rider, which then acts as a stepping stone to Europe and trying to get into higher teams over there, or Conti teams or World Tour teams over there. So it's really exciting.
When you talk about experience, do you talk about, you know, there's all the Zwift in the world you can do, but nothing beats the fact that you go shoulder to shoulder with other riders? Is that what you mean in part of getting that experience, that racing experience?
Yeah, experience just comes down to doing a race over and over again. So it's always good to have that time racing instead of just training, because then you can turn those skills into actually important, techniques and skills overseas in the pelotons, which is something that I've personally struggled with a lot last year. I think just that's the best thing for me is experience at this point.
So as Kelly Bennett talking about the importance, actually, you mentioned it about the European calendar as well, and the importance of having this summer of cycling and this ability of being just to be competitive on your own roads, to be able to then therefore be competitive in Europe. And you've been there as well. Like, you've been a big architect of the NRS when it was on, and also you've been to Europe. So you know the difference there is between an Australian racing and a European /Italian/Belgium/French/Spanish type of racing.
Yeah, exactly. But to go a little bit further, the professionalism is really lifted, particularly since the domestic riders have been racing Tour Down Under. Now, the men's have done it for a long time. Our domestic ladies have started to really get a shot at that in the last 2 years. And what I've seen through Team Bridge Lane, through the ladies, is that their professionalism in their training and preparations from each time they've gone and come out the back end of it has really improved. What our ladies have been able to do to prepare for Europe, which they'll leave after Grafton, is phenomenal. They're all in amazing shape because they now have an understanding of the level that they have to get at just to be competitive in Europe, not to win, but to be competitive and to be part of the races. So I love the fact that this series will be done at the front end of the season, allow time for athletes to go abroad and then come back. But as I said earlier, would love to still see some races at the back end of the season, because there's still preparation for national championships and things like that. So you need those bridge races, and not everyone can afford to go to Europe for 6 months. Furthermore to that, I really still will try through our program to give as many junior 19s exposure as possible. I think that's really important as well. The under 19s really need to race against the elites to stay at the level they need to be competitive at their world championship level. So it's not just about the National Road Series turning into the Super League. It's also about the under 19s still being able to compete against our best elite riders and our best under 23 riders in the country. So they're elevating themselves as well.
Yeah, totally agree. It was fantastic to talk to you, my dear friend, Pat, and surely we'll hear a lot from you. One last comment. You've been on the commentating seat lately with Keith as well and so on, and I believe you absolutely love the experience again.
Oh, it was amazing. I'm never short of passion and enjoy watching the races and giving my thoughts, of course, and really thankful to all the people that messaged me. Some really kind comments that came through, and as you know, mate, I just love...
Including mine.
I have a lot of pleasure in talking about the sport and always want to bring it to people in the bright light. So it's fantastic to have had the opportunity.
And thank you, Pat, for your time as well in this podcast with us today.
Thank you, and see you next time.